Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
This is Carson's Corner, and I'm your host, Bob Carson. Tribute there to my good friend, Eddie Goldman. Very, very proud to have his endorsement. Eddie's the best in the business box. I think I'm going to open up the show like that every single time. Same signature for the openings and the same signature for the closing. Definitely something that I hope to do. All right, we have a great, great show for you today. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to call in to the Bellator 163 press conference. I was really, really excited. You know, Scott Coker was on the press conference call. Phil Davis was, and of course, Lee and Geary, who are fighting each other next Friday at the Mohegan Sun, which, by the way, I'm going to try to go to. I'm going to try to cover that because at that event, I think after that event, either after or before, you're going to have the Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen press conference. Their upcoming fight, I believe, in January. I just decided to call in. It's something that, you know, we try to do from time to time. We've covered Bellator events in the past, and when Bellator runs local shows, I'll go up there and I'll cover them. Sometimes I'll go with Eddie, sometimes not. The last one I went to was Tito Ortiz Stefan Bonner Brawl. That was just absolutely hilarious. And then after that program, after that show, we had, I don't know if we had Stefan on, but we had Justin McCulley on, Jason Brills and John Loger, three Tito Ortiz training partners, talking about how he stiffed them in various ways, therefore earning the nickname Cheapo Ortiz. You know, I haven't been there, I haven't covered a Bellator event in a while, so I'm going to try to make an attempt to go up there, cover this event. I'm interested to see what happens with Phil Davis, Lee, and the Geary fight. I was going to try to ask them a couple of questions yesterday, but I got cut off, unfortunately, because I think my question kind of pissed off Scott Coker. I asked about the entertainment route that Bellator apparently is going, and whether or not the new ownership of the UFC, if they decide to go out wholeheartedly, will that sort of leave the sport in a state of limbo where now you're just trying to put on a show out there and sort of, I guess, ignore the sports aspect of mixed martial arts? And he actually doesn't think that Bellator's length entertains out at all. I mean, you know, he was just almost completely dismissive of my question, which I was really, really surprised, because there's just really no doubt that Bellator, really, with the leadership of Scott Coker, has gone more towards the side. I mentioned the brawl. I'm not sure if Coker was on board back with Tito and stuff on the brawl. But you know, you could certainly look at matchups. You could get Kimbo versus Nada 5000, which is a real spectacle. The way that was promoted was a complete spectacle. I actually spoke about that on Eddie Goldman's show. The racist nature of the promotion of that fight. You could look at Floyd Shamrock versus Gracie. Other fights that have really fell under the entertainment side of things. And, you know, there's no question about that. Now, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I mean, Bellator has done very, very well with the ratings. I mean, Kimbo Slice, regardless of his sport in terms of title contention, he was a huge ratings draw. I mean, Ken versus Royce 3, that was a ratings draw. That's what they're trying to do. Spike TV is supportive of that direction, and that's great. I watch the UFC, okay, and for all of their nonsense and trash talk, the emphasis on trash talk, but I watch the UFC, I cover it, so there's a part of me that enjoys that aspect of the sport at this point. But you know, I just think that that questions have to be asked of Scott Coker and Bellator, and does Scott Coker have a moral responsibility to really offer a different emotional approach than the UFC? That's an interesting question. So I'm going to play you my question to Scott Coker yesterday on conference call, and then from there I'm going to play a good portion of conference call yesterday, which lasted about 40 minutes or so. I had some interesting questions. A lot of amateurs have called in, and a lot of people I've never heard of in college. They didn't have too many good questions there and whatnot. And like I said, after I asked my second question, I got immediately cut off. I don't know if that was the operator or a certain amount of time that was allotted for each person, but I definitely had some follow-up questions for Phil and for Liam and Scott as well. So I'm going to play this clip here. This is me asking Bellator President Scott Coker about the direction of Bellator and your response. And you can judge whether or not that he is pleased with the question.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star and the number 1. Our next question comes from the line of Bob Carson.
Hi, thank you. This question is for Scott Coker. Scott, you've spoken about in the past your thoughts on WME's acquisition of the UFC and what it might mean for Bellator, but I just had a couple of specific questions relating to the changing MMA landscape. until the sale, I think the common narrative amongst fans and analysts alike was that Bellator, under your leadership, was promoting more of an entertainment-oriented product with fights like Shamrock Gracie and Kimbo and Dada 5000 and so on and so forth. My question is, what if WME goes the entertainment route wholeheartedly with the UFC? Could that leave MMA in a state where we have the two largest promotions competing for entertainment value in sort of a recognition-based promotional arms race while the sport languishes at a high level?
You know, I'll tell you, I don't think that's a fair assessment of Bellator, actually. And what I mean by that is, if you look at, you know, the fun fights we put on, the legend fights, but all along we put on fights, you know, like, you know, the fights with King Mo and Phil and Liam and all his title fights, or his fights getting to the championship. Look at all the fights at Pitbull Weichel fight, Strauss versus Pitbull. I mean, we've had some amazing, amazing hardcore fight fans, you know, fights that they would enjoy. And so when you say that, you know, we're just an entertainment property, I think that if you look at the show, yeah, it's an entertaining event. We have the screens, we have all the, you know, all the accolades. I mean, all the, you know, hoopla of let's say, you know, walking down the ramp and the pyro and just making a big spectacle. But as far as, you know, having the legends fights, I mean, I would say probably 5% of our fights have been fights like that. And so I think that that's my personal opinion. And then, you know, the, if, you know, commenting on what WME is going to do, I really don't know what they're going to do. But I think that we'll always have the integrity of the sport as well as some legend fights that, you know, will be fun to watch, like the Tito fight with Chael. I mean, that's a fight that I can't wait to sit and watch that fight. But look at the fight here next weekend with Liam. Look at the Chandler fight. I mean, look at the Shlemenko fight that just happened. I mean, we have something for everybody, and I think that, you know, we'll do some fun fights once in a while. And but I would say, you know, 90% of our fights are going to be the, you know, the hardcore fights that the fans want to see.
Yeah, there's been some talk about the future of the UFC under the ownership of WME. Do you have any concerns at all that they may try to return to their previous home of Spike TV, which I think most people believe was a better fit for the UFC product, but would usurp Bellator's position there, or would that be contractually impossible?
Well, I would say this. I mean, if you think about, you know, Bellator, it's owned by Spike TV and owned by Viacom, you know, so now they own the product. They're going to invest in it and build it and promote it, because, you know, they're the ownership. And when you're an owner of something, you're going to get behind it. And that's really what Spike TV has done. I think that Spike TV and Kevin Kaye specifically has not received the credit that he deserves, because when in 2005 or six, when he greenlit having MMA on his network, you know, there was no other network that was willing to do it. And he was the one that said, all right, I'll give it a shot. If he would have said no, this sport could have died, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And so, you know, I think that he's got to be given his due respect that, you know, that Spike TV gave it the shot. And think about this. They're good at promotions. When I stepped into this company, the people that were working in PR, the people that were working in production, the people that were working behind the scenes during all the, you know, 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the time that, you know, there was UFA, are still there. Most of them are still there. So they know MMA. They know how to promote MMA. They know how to do PR with MMA. They know how to, you know, they're very good at what they do. So I think that, you know, you got to give Spike TV some credit, and you got to give Kevin Kaye specifically a lot of respect, because this sport could have died if he didn't green light that show.
Very interesting take there from Scott Coker yesterday on the Bellator 163 press conference. I don't know if the sport would have died without the Spike TV support, and, you know, Kevin Kaye, who's the president of Spike TV. You know, it's an interesting discussion, but I just think at this point, it's fairly obvious that Bellator has gone the entertainment route, certainly a bad thing. If they can pull as much ratings as they possibly can, I don't know whether or not they're going to be able to go back to the pay-per-view model, or, you know, even try to put on the pay-per-views under Yorn Ebony. Really working out, so now this could be a new niche, it could be a new angle now for Bellator play. And of course, you know, you've got international travels. Bellator has shown willingness or expressed interest in going internationally. The UFC is contracting at this point. We show domestic shows, and so, you know, the future is still open for Bellator. They're certainly getting a lot of acquisitions They're certainly getting a lot of people that a lot of fighters that are stumbled with the UFC. I guess the MMA landscape, in terms of places where fighters can fight, is a lot better than what it was a year or two ago. Again, so many people are dissatisfied with the UFC and their treatment of fighters, and there's other options out there right now. I'm going to play some more clips from the press conference from yesterday. Some fairly interesting questions. Some media figures I recognize, some I didn't. But I think you'll get a good feel for Liam and Bill and how they're coming up in the second hour. We have Jeff Curran on the program, UFC veteran, Pride veteran, just about every major organization Jeff Curran has fought in. He's fought for almost 20 years. He's the cousin of a former Bellator Bantamweight champion, I want to say, Pat Curran. And he's going to be on the program. He's got a fight coming up on UFC Fight Pass and Victory Fighting Championship 53. I'm going to talk to him about that. Talk to him. He's a very, very impressive career, which, as I said, almost spans two decades. So that'll be on. Here is some of the conference call yesterday from Bellator, running Bellator 163 up in the evening sun.
Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome, and thank you for joining us on today's conference call. We've got today with us, we've got Bellator President Scott Coker, light heavyweight champion Liam McGarry, and title challenger Phil Davis to discuss the upcoming fight, Bellator 163, taking place next Friday, November 4th at the Mohegan Sun. There's live and free on Spike at 9 Eastern and 8 Central. You won't want to miss the preliminary action for this event. It's going to be highlighted by the professional debuts of top prospects Ed Ruth and Tyrell Fortune. That action can be caught on Bellator.com and the Bellator mobile app starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. Today you'll be able to ask questions to the participants by dialing *1 on your keypad. A couple quick things worth mentioning. Limited tickets for Bellator 163 still remain, can be purchased at Bellator.com and Ticketmaster.com. Also, media and fans are invited to the Mohegan Sun Thursday, November 3rd, for the live weigh-ins at 5 p.m. Eastern. These are free, open to the public. The weigh-ins will be immediately followed by Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen kickoff press conference. That event, Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen, Bellator 170, takes place January 21st at the Forum in L.A., and tickets go on sale this Friday at Ticketmaster and Bellator.com. Again, press *1 on your keypads if you'd like to ask a question, and operator, you can take it from here.
If you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. That's *1. Our first question comes from the line of Steve Dwan with MMAmania.com.
Thank you, operator. I have a couple questions for the champ and the challenger. I'd like to start with Liam McGarry. If he could tell us what his injury was like over the last year and how he's rehabbed from that to get ready for this fight, I'd be grateful.
My injury was annoying. It's kept me away from this sport for a long time, almost a year now. But now I'm looking forward to getting back into it.
All right. Specifically, though, was it knee? Was it what? Did you have it scoped? Did you have an ACL? Can you go into specifics?
It was my knee. I didn't. I just had to get a load of fixed up repairs. There was a load of damage done inside. Just had to get it fixed up. I couldn't really stand on it too well.
All right. Well, now that it's all fully healed up, how are you looking forward to Phil Davis, knowing that he's been waiting a year for this chance?
I can't wait, man. I'll do mine for a year for him as well. So, it's going to be good fun. It's going to be a good fight.
All right. And to the challenger, Mr. Wonderful, I noticed that today Bellator is going really hard on a Vote for Phil Davis campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about the idea behind that?
Yeah, we're just we're promoting this fight, and we're also having a little fun with this crazy election that we have going on.
and the fact that this fight's going to be equally as crazy but equally as one-sided. So, you know, it's just comedy all the way around, you know? You know, you got one character and then one, well, tough guy, sort of. Well, forget about the election. Just let's talk about the fight. You still got one character, and then you got one cool guy. You know, it is what it is. And kudos for Bellator for recognizing that there could be so much comedy in the world out there.
Do you feel like this has been a year in the making, as I just said to Liam McGarry, or does it feel like it's 4 years in the making, going all the way back to when you fought Rashad for a title shot?
Yeah, you know what? That this was this is very reminds me of that moment. I like the feeling of knowing that I'm in the semis or that I'm in the finals. That the pressure's on. That moment of do or die. I love that moment. I thrive in that moment, and I'm so glad to be back in that moment of do or die, all or nothing. And that's where I shine. That's where I do my best work.
All right. We look forward to seeing that at November 4th. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you both.
Question comes from the line of Steven Morocco with USA Today.
I had a question for Scott. There was a certain point in which this fight was rumored for the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and I'm wondering what happened with that.
We were trying to work out our schedule with TV and with the venue, and we just couldn't put it together. So, you know, we moved over to the Mohegan Sun, which I think is a great venue. It's been an amazing venue for Bellator fights, and we're gonna have a good time next Friday.
Now that it's legalized, you got two shows scheduled for the rest of the year. Do you guys have any concrete plans for getting into New York at this point?
Yeah, we're continuing to talk with them. I know we have a couple of dates on hold, as far as the fight, we want to bring the right fight there, and I think that if we could have put it together, this fight would have been one of the big fights on the card. But we're gonna wait, and when we do it, we're gonna do it right. And there's no timetable on whether it happens in the first quarter of next year or happens in the summertime. But when we come, Stephen, I assure you we're gonna bring our guns when we come to New York.
Do you by chance have those dates handy?
No, I can't talk about the dates right now. But as soon as we know, we get a little closer, I'm sure that Danny will get the information to you guys.
Gotcha. And then a question for both Liam and Phil. You guys had a little bit of an interaction backstage after your last fight, Phil. I'm wondering how you interpreted that interaction. It seemed like Phil kind of made a joke at your expense, Liam, and you guys were laughing, but kind of that was, with a couple months between you and then, I'm kind of wondering how you interpreted that whole run-in.
You're talking to me, him.
You can start, Liam.
Okay. That whole interaction, laughing and joking around, all the fun and games are over now. I've had 3-4 months of getting ready for him, the torture I put myself through in this gym. I'm getting ready to take it out on him. You can make all the jokes and try to make it turn into a laugh. At the end of the day, we're going to fight him, and this is going to be a tough fight. All the pressures or whatever you want to call it, but I'm going to go in there, and I'm going in there to hurt him.
Well, the fun and games are not over. The fun and games have just begun. And you've been training for 4 months for this fight. I've had over a full year I put into wearing your butt out and dragging your face across the mat.
It's easier to talk all that shit over the phone, man. Let's wait and see if we see each other next week.
Well, we will see each other next week. And only one of us is going to have fun and games. I can promise you that.
All right, let's move to our next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Eric Tomiso with ESPN.
All right, guys, thank you for your time this afternoon. My first question is for Liam. Phil Davis has never been stopped in any of his pro fights. Why are you confident that you'd be the one to be able to not only defeat him but stop him in this fight?
Never been finished. They've never been an English champion before either. Tito had never been submitted before either. So there's always a chance that these nevers always get broken, and I'm going to be the man to do it.
And still, obviously, Liam's an undefeated champion. Why are you confident that you'll give him his first loss in his pro career?
I mean, it's just precious. His whole answer is just precious. He don't know no better, okay? It's just a matter of, you know how kids are when they say things, and it's cute because they don't realize they're not faster than a race car. Okay, listen, this is you're going up against a grown man, okay? This is not a game. It's not a joke. You're in the big leagues now.
All right, and my next question is for Scott. I just want to have you talk about the decision to sign Tyrell Fortune and Ed Ruth without any prior MMA experience and how you guys plan on promoting them after their debuts next week.
You know, it goes back to our commitment to, continue to build this roster and to find, the next stars of our sport. And we've always felt that in the wrestling space, there's been a lot of talent out there, like the Ed Roos and the Fortunes and the Picos. And we made a conscious decision to go out and grab as many as we could and, and bring them into Bellator, have them start training in MMA, which, the transition, has for the guys that I've been keeping in touch with have been pretty good. And, they're ready to go. And we signed Ed Ruth, I want to say eight months ago. And, we've been making sure he's in the right camp and has the right sparring partners. We have high hopes for some of these kids, but at the end of the day, they're going to have to go out there and they're going to have to fight. And it's different than just wrestling. I mean, it's one of the disciplines that's important in mixed martial arts, but at the end of the day, someone's going to be punching him and kicking him and kneeing him. And I'm sure they can deal with the takedowns, but somebody's going to be submitting him. It's a much different game. So it's going to be interesting to see, how this turns out, but we have high hopes for our wrestling prospects in Bellator.
And judging on how well they do next week, how far would you guys plan on pushing them towards to the more experienced fighters on your roster?
I mean, to me, everybody's going to be in an individual path. But, let's say, for instance, if these guys do well and they win, and, maybe we'll fight them in the next 2 or 3 months. And we don't want to wait, 4, 5, 6 months for these guys to fight. They're young. They're coming off some great Olympic experience. These guys are world-class athletes. And so to me, when I say Olympic experience, I mean, I saw Ed, wrestle in the Worlds and then he went to the Olympic trials and all that, but it didn't work out for him, but he was at that elite level and let him continue on. I mean, they're, to me, it's, they can go fight 2, 3 months apart. And then when they get about to 6, 7, 8 fights, they're going to have to start, fighting some of the tougher guys in our league, so it's going to be fun times ahead for those guys.
All right. That's all I had. Thank you very much.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. On your telephone keypad, that's *1. Our next question comes from the line of Sean Rossap with Fightful.com.
A question for Scott. You have a couple of big women's featherweight and heavyweight fights on this show as well. What are the immediate plans, if any, for the titles in those divisions, or will there be one? We had Julia Budd say that she's heard that a championship may be instituted for that division.
Yeah, you know what? We tried to put that Marlos Conan fight with Julia Budd together a couple months ago, and then there was an injury. It didn't work out. Marlos had a fight, and the girl she fought was, a little bit heavy, and the fight happened anyway, so it was outside of the weight class. So Julia just fought. We're going to let Marlos fight, and then we're going to come back and revisit that whole division. But that's pretty much what I have to say about, that female division. But I will say this, when you look at this card from top to bottom, I mean, the main event is going to be amazing, and these guys, they have it all. These guys are the complete mixed martial artists of today. If you think about the striking ability, the ground game, the wrestling ability, and submission games, they have everything. But also, Paul Daly versus Derek Anderson, that's going to be another amazing fight. Brandon Ward versus Saad, and then, Marlos, on the card in the debut of Sergey Karatanov. I mean, this is from top to bottom, an amazing card, and, we're proud to put it on, and we're going to have a lot of fun on Spike TV next Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
How about the heavyweight division? Are there any plans with that title?
Yes, that's something that we're working on. Actually, you know, we're pretty diligent about putting something together here. But we don't have anything to announce. But I can promise you something that in the first quarter of next year, we're going to make some moves on that division.
And for Phil, would you have seen yourself coming to Bellator under their old regime, or was a lot of that dependent on Scott Coker?
A lot of that was dependent on Scott Coker. I know what he's capable of running, the type of business he's capable of running, how he's able to build fighters, how he's able to build a promotion, promote fighters, and put on the best fights in the gosh darn world. So it really had a lot to do with Scott Coker and all that he's done and able to do.
Your campaign was also mentioned. You've been very active on the company's YouTube and promoting things in that manner. Was that something that you pitched, or was that something that they came to you and brought?
You know, a lot of it is just my ideas, just me being silly and squirrely. I like to always be doing something. You know, I just throw ideas out there, and a lot of them are stupid, and a lot of them you'll never hear about. But this one actually wasn't my idea entirely, but sometimes I talking and brainstorm, and something awesome comes up. So I cannot claim credit for this one.
And for Liam, you were around before Scott Coker was around. How would you compare the two regimes?
Completely different. The way Scott runs it to the way the other dude did is completely different. Scott's very he interacts with the fighters a lot more. He's very personal. You can go up and speak to him. If you've got any problems, you know, he's always welcoming. And the other guy, well, I didn't even see him. You know, it was, if I went to go speak to him, I was like talking to two different people, you know. So Scott, I feel comfortable around Scott. He's a good dude.
Thank you, guys.
Our next question comes from the line of Theo Goodman.
Hi, the first question is for Liam. How's your training camp been going? And given Phil Davis's high-level wrestling, have you been working on your takedown defense? I know a lot of times in the past you just kind of roll with the takedown. How's your training camp?
Training camp has gone really well. I've been able to do a lot of things which I haven't been able to do before. I've been wrestling a lot, jiu-jitsu a lot, swimming a lot. I'm just ready for a good time.
Nice. How about your weight? How's your weight cut going?
Please mute your phone when you're not asking a question.
There's some mad echo on this one.
Go ahead.
What was the question?
How's your weight cut been going?
What weight cut? There's never any weight cut. My weight is fine. I like to fight comfortable weight. I like to eat my full meals afterwards. I don't need to worry about a weight cut. What I do is I go training. I enjoy myself with training. And then I'm ready to go.
Okay, thanks. Phil Davis, how about your training camp? How's it been going?
My training camp's been going great. I can't complain. Everything's been going right according to plan. Everything's clicking and popping and just ready to get in there and scrap.
Our next question comes from the line of Chime.
Yeah, hi, guys. Question for Phil Davis. You've got a couple of wins over some really big names. Do you think your experience in big fights will give you an edge in this fight? Hello?
Who's that for?
Yeah, hi. I'm sorry. Did you get that?
Was that to me?
Question for Phil Davis.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if you heard that. Do you need me to repeat it?
No. I got it. You were asking me about my experience in big fights. I was assuming since Liam was a champion, I thought maybe he would want to speak up. But figures he knows you were talking to me. But
Yeah, no. I
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I started off saying that you had a couple of big name wins, therefore.
Left and right, and big on big stages and big fights. Yeah, you know, this will be, yeah, you know, he's tough, and he's going to be, he's going to put up the best fight of his life, and, you know, I'm still going to come out with a W.
Sure, thank you. Quick question for Scott Coker, if I may. You're going to Israel for a show next month. There were a couple of talks about Bellator possibly looking at India. Is India on Bellator's radar by any chance?
I tell you, it's definitely a possibility. I know that Viacom has a big presence in India, and they have a couple of networks there as well. But, you know, right now, you know, we're going to focus on getting these international dates done this year, and then we'll probably have something to announce next year. But India is definitely on the radar because, you know, because, like I said, because of Viacom's strength and networks there in India.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star and the number 1. Our next question comes from the line of Steven Morocco with USA Today.
Got another one for you, Scott. Just saw this story about another one of your fighters, Brendan Ward, apparently rescuing a baby who had been abandoned by a drunk man in New London. Kind of wanted to get your reaction to that, what you think it says about him as a fighter and as a person.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan is a guy that has a big heart, very passionate guy, and, you know, he's he proved it, you know, the other day when cars were swerving inside, cars were swerving around the baby carriage, and he actually ran in front of traffic to see if there was somebody or a baby in there. And then you know, he pulled the baby aside. The cops came, and you know, they eventually took the child away. But you know, he saved a situation that could have been a really bad story instead of a great story for Brendan. So I got to give him a shout out, and that's an amazing story, and we're proud of him.
What's at stake for his fight with Saad coming up? Is there a title shot possibly on the line with that one?
Well, you know, we have a lot of high hopes for Brendan, and you know, we're gonna try to keep him as busy as we can. He's got this fight, but he's gotta win too. And you know, he had a tough fight with Cyborg in the last show there at the Mohegan Sun, and let's see what happens. But you know, if he can, you know, rebound, get the win here, you know, we'll probably keep him busy. You know, fight him in the next 2 or 3 months. And really see what he's got. But at the end of the day, he's got to do the work on his side too, and really earn that, you know, earn that shot moving forward.
Great, thanks.
Okay.
Our next question comes from the line of Jordy McElroy.
So on this one for Phil, Bellator, they've done such a great job of promoting with the Vote 2016 ads, and you know, you're fighting for a world title. And what has it been like for you going from being a perennial contender to having more of the spotlight focused solely on you?
Man, I really enjoyed the journey of going, of climbing up to where I am now, and I'm going to enjoy even more taking the belt, bringing it home to San Diego, and then defending it for a while. So it's just been a great experience. And so I'm really thankful to be where I am.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Ryan Gerbasi.
Hi, this question is for Scott. You had said that before that you were looking for the right fight if you guys were going to come to New York. What would that fight be? Would it be a championship fight, one of your big-name guys? And are you only looking at Barclays Center at this point, or are there other venues in the works?
Actually, you know, well, let's address the venue. I mean, we are talking to both venues in New York, in the city there, and I think we'll probably go to the city first. As far as bringing the right fight, I mean, it's New York. We gotta come strong. So there's, you know, some great talent on the roster. I think timing's going to be an issue of, you know, when these guys are available. But, you know, I really don't have anything to announce as far as timing or who's going to fight. Other than, you know, I think you've seen some of the big mega fight cards that we put together, and we're going to do the same, and even bigger from New York, because, you know, that's you've been waiting, what, 15, 20 years for an MMA show. And, you know, there'll be a lot of MMA now that is legal, but, you know, Viacom is based out of New York City. And we're going to do it right. I mean, all those executives in 1515 Broadway from Viacom are going to come to the show, and it's going to be a great showcase for all the properties, and it'll be a big, you know, planting the flag in the ground for Viacom there in New York City.
Sure. And this is for Liam. Having spent a good amount of time in Brooklyn now, how excited would you be to get on that first card?
That'd be massive. I'm well excited. It's a shame we couldn't get it done beforehand, but it's right around the corner from where I live. It's a really nice venue. I've been there a few times, and it'd be good to put on a good MMA fight night for all the Brooklyn fans.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star and the number 1. Our next question comes from the line of Bob Carson.
Hi, thank you. This question is for Scott Coker. Scott, you've spoken about in the past your thoughts on WME's acquisition of the UFC and what it might mean for Bellator, but I just had a couple of specific questions relating to the changing MMA landscape. until the sale, I think the common narrative amongst fans and analysts alike was that Bellator, under your leadership, was promoting more of an entertainment-oriented product with fights like Shamrock Gracie and Kimbo and Dada 5000 and so on and so forth. My question is, what if WME goes the entertainment route wholeheartedly with the UFC? Could that leave MMA in a state where we have the two largest promotions competing for entertainment value in sort of a recognition-based promotional arms race while the sport languishes at a high level?
You know, I'll tell you, I don't think that's a fair assessment of Bellator, actually. And what I mean by that is, if you look at, you know, the fun fights we put on, the legend fights, but all along we put on fights, you know, like, you know, the fights with King Mo and Phil and Liam and all his title fights, or his fights getting to the championship. Look at all the fights at Pitbull, Weichel fight, Strauss versus Pitbull. I mean, we've had some amazing, amazing hardcore fight fans, you know, fights that they would enjoy. And so when you say that, you know, we're just an entertainment property, I think that if you look at the show, yeah, it's an entertaining event. We have the screens, you have all the, you know, all the accolades. I mean, all the, you know, hoopla of let's say, you know, walking down the ramp and the pyro and just making a big spectacle. But as far as, you know, having the legends fights, I mean, I would say probably 5% of our fights have been fights like that. And so I think that's my personal opinion. And then, you know, commenting on what WME is going to do, I really don't know what they're going to do. But I think that we'll always have the integrity of the sport as well as some legend fights that, you know, will be fun to watch, like the Tito fight with Chael. I mean, that's a fight that I can't wait to sit and watch that fight. But look at the fight here next weekend with Liam. Look at the Chandler fight. I mean, look at the Shlemenko fight that just happened. I mean, we have something for everybody, and I think that, you know, we'll do some fun fights once in a while. But I would say, you know, 90% of our fights are going to be the, you know, the hardcore fights that the fans want to see.
Yeah, there's been some talk about the future of the UFC under the ownership of WME. Do you have any concerns at all that they may try to return to their previous home of Spike TV, which I think most people believe was a better fit for the UFC product, but would usurp Bellator's position there, or would that be contractually impossible?
Well, I would say this. I mean, if you think about, you know, Bellator, it's owned by Spike TV and owned by Viacom, you know, so now they own the product. They're going to invest in it and build it and promote it because, you know, they're the ownership. And when you're an owner of something, you're going to get behind it. And that's really what Spike TV has done. I think that Spike TV and Kevin Kaye specifically has not received the credit that he deserves because when in 2005 or six, when he greenlit having MMA on his network, you know, there was no other network that was willing to do it. And he was the one that said, all right, I'll give it a shot. If he would have said no, this sport could have died, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And so, you know, I think that he's got to be given his due respect that, you know, that Spike TV gave it the shot. And think about this. They're good at promotions. When I stepped into this company, The people that were working in PR, the people that were working in production, the people that were working behind the scenes during all the, 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the time that, there was UFA, are still there. Most of them are still there. So they know how, they know MMA. They know how to promote MMA. They know how to do PR with MMA. They know how to, they're very good at what they do. So I think that, you got to give Spike TV some credit, and you got to give Kevin Kay specifically a lot of respect, because this sport could have died if he didn't green light that show.
Our last question comes from the line of Eric Tomiso.
Thank you. First question, I have two quick questions. First one's for Phil. I just want to get your thoughts on a fellow Penn State national champion, Ed Ruth, making his debut, and what relationship, if any, you've had with him since he's ventured into MMA.
I don't like him. I tell you what, he's more handsome than I am. The guy goes to my alma mater. He's from my hometown. He destroys every single record I've ever had. Pins, wins, Big Ten championships, national championships. I mean, my parade through my city as the best wrestler of all time was so short-lived. And now this man is back in the MMA, and he's going to make a huge splash and become a massive star and champion in his own right. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. That's what I think about him. I don't know what to do. Everywhere I go, he goes, and he does it even better. So I don't know what to do.
All right, my last question is for both Phil and Liam. Liam, you first. You guys have had some little bit of back and forth here, as well as somebody mentioned moment you guys had backstage a few months back. I'd just like to have you both characterize your relationship with each other leading into the fight next week.
This is me, is it? Talking's over. I've done all the talking I need to do. I'm watching all these silly little videos that he puts up thinking, how's he got time to do these videos? He should be in the gym training. I've done all the talking I needed to do. We had a laugh and a joke around back then. I was back when he was fighting, but now it's time to get serious. Now it's time to get on this. I've got a belt to defend, and I will be defending it. I'm not going to let that squeaky voice weirdo going to take it off me.
What, was that directed toward me, squeaky voice? Unbelievable.
I think so, mate. You're the only one with that high-pitched voice. How hard can you get that voice, by the way?
Unbelievable.
You do all them Michael Jackson songs, you know?
That's a thing.
Singing a lot of the Bee Gees.
Well, I used to like Liam. But you know what? I'll tell you what. Out of all the guys I fought, I'm going to like punching him in the face the least. He's actually a pretty funny guy. But business is business, and I'm going to have to come at this man like a spider monkey. And he's right. He will defend that belt, but he will be unsuccessful. So, that being said, I will be the new champion. But yeah, I'm sure we'll be friends after that, I'm sure, at some point.
Definitely. This is just business. And my business is to break your nose.
Well, then you better your business, because it's not going to happen.
We'll see, man. Well, you've been spending 3 years working on your hands now, yeah? You learn how to throw a nice one, too.
All right. You're not the first one to make promises you can't deliver on. You got anything else?
If you don't see my record, it's 11-0 reason. If I say I'm going to knock him out, I knock him out. If I say I'm going to submit him, I submit him. You? I just want to beat you in the fucking face.
So, are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do?
I'm definitely sure, mate. I haven't had a fight for a year. You're in trouble, man. And I'm healthy.
You haven't had a fight for a year, and you think you can just jump off the bench fresh. Wrong. Wrong. The world don't work like that. Listen, I've been beating people up while I've been waiting to beat up you, okay? Your pitcher is on a bag in my gym, and I just beat the pitcher off the bag, okay? For the second time.
Are you in the lose ones? Oh, man, you do that kind of thing. That's sad, sad little man.
Oh, I am a sad little man. I cry every night. I say, man, I wanted to beat Liam up after September 19th last year, after I secured my place as the number one contender, and did not go home and cry, why? Why? Liam is running scared for his life. He's running.
I've never been running scared.
Then, you know what? Then Team Mo had to get beat up. You know what? That's not even on him. That's on you. That's on you.
You didn't even. You were like, look, man.
He got beat up.
King, shit. He fucking whooped your ass. You had the 3 minutes in the last round, which was the only decent thing in that fight. The rest of them was fucking falling asleep. Just
oh,
like
really?
All your other fights, mate.
Really.
All your other fights. Man, I turned them shits over.
I hope you get caught up on your sleep, because I will help you.
I'll fucking have your jaw wide up straight after this fight, mate.
Well, good. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, it's going to happen. Trust me.
All right.
Cannot wait.
None of us can wait. And so that'll take place next Friday at the Mohegan Sun, live and free on Spike at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. Thank you, everybody, for joining today's call, and we'll see you at the fights.
That concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines.
Questions we have as we grow, it's hard to find answers to what we don't know, but sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons, help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand, to lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, I'm proud to boast, I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach. To never surrender your hopes or your travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known.
live here on Carson's Corner. I apologize about that little delay after the press conference. My computer went down. What else is new? My computer froze. I had to reboot it. And here we are back on the air. We're supposed to be speaking to Jeff Curran. He's supposed to be calling in here on Carson's Corner. He's got a big fight coming up for Victory Fighting Championship. It's going to be on UFC Fight Pass on November 23rd. And we look forward to speaking with him momentarily. What did you think about that press conference, huh? I thought it was pretty interesting. You know, it was back and forth. You could tell that those two guys really, they do not like each other. You know, you could tell that they're just trying to make it entertaining, kind of just being a little silly here and there. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that Phil Davis has got to be the favorite in this fight. One of the questions I was going to ask Liam McGeary, and Liam McGeary actually said on the press conference that Tito Ortiz had never been submitted. Of course, Tito Ortiz was submitted. He was submitted by Frank Shamrock almost 15 years ago when Liam fought him last year, and Liam submitted him almost 15 years to the day. And then before that, he was submitted by Guy Mezger. I want to say, was it UFC 50, where Guy Mezger got him in a choke. And so, yeah, Tito's a very good grappler. I mean, he hasn't been submitted in a long time. And so it is impressive, even though Tito is, what, 38, 39 years old. You know, he's clearly past his prime. But in any event, Liam's right. I was going to ask Liam about his inverted triangle choke. You know, that's the submission he caught Tito in. And I want to say Kelly Knutson, too, as well. And I just, you know, wanted to get his take on how did it evolve. I know he's training with John Danaher, who is an excellent jiu-jitsu coach and has a whole bunch of really high-level jiu-jitsu competitors competing under his banner. Yeah, I wanted to sort of get his take on that. And you've got someone in Phil Davis who's an NCAA champion and has very, very good ground control. And, you know, I wanted to get Liam's take on whether or not he's going to have to be put in a position where he's going to neutralize or have to win the wrestling battle with a wrestler, or he's going to have to win the striking battle, you know, because you just don't see a lot of champions win fights on their backs. You know, it's not like the earlier UFC days where, you know, Hoyce Gracie can be on his back for most of the fight and wind up winning. It just doesn't happen. But Liam McGeary thus far has kind of proved to be an outlier in that regard. You know, he hasn't been, this will be his first title defense. And so the jury's still out as to whether or not he can, you know, continue to win fights off of his back. But it's certainly possible because Liam McGeary is 6'6", very tall. I'm not sure, you know, Phil Davis fought Gustafson, and I think Gustafson wound up beating Phil Davis. And Gustafson is relatively the same size as Liam McGeary. And so, you know, it could be that Phil has trouble fighting longer fighters. You know, it's anybody's guess, but we're going to look forward to seeing that. Like I said, I'm going to try to make it up there for this event at Mohegan Sun. It's only about 3 hours away, but it's really a long drive, but I may end up going. I was incorrect. The Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz, as you heard, in the conference call, the weigh-in is actually on Thursday. Or the press conference is on Thursday after the weigh-in for the McGeary Phil Davis card. So it's not on Friday as I thought. But you know, I'd be willing to bet that these guys will be there. I'd be willing to bet that Tito and Chael will be there and do some sort of in-cage promotional stint Friday, you know, between fights, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Actually, Chael Sonnen wrote a poem about Tito Ortiz. I don't know if you guys heard that or whatnot. So hopefully we'll be able to make it. You know, hopefully we could try to take some pictures and get some audio. There are a lot of good fights on this card. I don't have the card in front of me, but they mentioned the debut of Ed Roof, which a lot of people are looking forward to. You've got Marlos Kunin that's fighting featherweight on this card. And I remember looking at it and saying it's an actually very, very impressive card. Some very impressive fights on this card. And we'll have to look forward. I'm really, like I said, I'm really, really looking forward. It's been a while since I covered a Bellator event. And, if they're in my backyard, if they're close to me, I'll certainly do it. I wanted to try to go up there with Eddie, but it's been just difficult for him, just energy-wise, to go to these events. You know, you've got the World Series of Fighting that's taking place in New York City, and I don't even know if Eddie's gonna go to that. You know, I don't even know if I'm gonna go to that. You know, who knows what's going on with the World Series of Fighting, but you would like to think that. You know, being in New York City, New York City is only about 40 minutes away from me. You would like to think that I'd be able to go into the city and cover these events. We'll see what happens. I'll keep posted. All right, I'm going to take a brief time out here, and I'm going to try to get in touch with Scott Zero, who does the media coordination for Lion Fights and Victory Fighting Championship. Scott Zero, of course, was formerly with Maximum Fighting Championship, and he's someone that I've worked with for a long time. I'll reach out to him, and hopefully sometime soon we'll have Jeff Cohen on the program here on Carson's Corner.
New Jersey residents, and we are very proud that the Moorhead Lily campaign is on the ballot in New Jersey today. And we're really going to make this a result. We're going to get a real campaign. They just counted our ballots and our petitions, but we needed 800 and we have 1,495.
There you go.
That's how many people support this campaign. And I'd like to.
I just want to say that we want to show people that there was an alternative to the Democrats and the Republican parties, and that there was another worthwhile agenda that those other two parties are not addressing. So I find this to be a very exciting moment, and I'm proud of the party.
I'm proud to be here. I'm proud that we were able to get this done despite all the hurdles. If workers find their life is apparently unstable for workers, and this campaign aims at making life stable for workers. We're advocates for a candidate that represents the actual interests of the working class, and is going to challenge both Trump and Hillary Clinton in their campaigns for never-ending war and never-ending poverty in the world. So.
I'm really very thankful for everybody who helped us get on the ballot in New Jersey. It's really inspiring. And I think one of the main messages that we want to put out there about our campaign is that elections do not change conditions for the better. We use the election as
the arena of struggle to promote, you know, unity and solidarity amongst the most oppressed with all workers. And yes, we're using the elections to get our message out because that's the main arena of struggle right now for the next. But beyond the election, that's been the real, you know, test of course. We're looking forward to what happens after the election, no matter who's in the White House, because we know that things are not going to change for the better. Things are going to get worse if this happens.
So we are to support to Mutka because I know to she to find me for Rio.
All right, we're back live here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. I apologize about the audio. I had to put something on real quick. I didn't want any more dead air. And that was the closest clip that I could find. So, okay, you're just going to have to deal with it. Still no word from Jeff Curran. I reached out to Scott Zur, and we'll give it some more time. We'll see what happens, whatnot. You heard Fight to Survive. That was the main song on the movie Bloodsport. And it's interesting because as that's happening, as I'm playing you that song, the legendary Frank Dukes texts me. He texts me some sort of freedom website or something. I don't know if it I got to look at the link, but it's been a while since we had Frank Dukes on the show. And maybe we'll have him back on sometime in the future. He's got a lot of things going on, I'm sure. He's doing a lot of seminars, doing a lot of training. Frank Dukes, ladies and gentlemen, is a good man. I met him. I consider him a friend. He actually invited me to his wedding. But unfortunately, I couldn't go. It was last November. I started a new job. And so, but we've had a good relationship with Frank and hope to have him on the show. Anytime we have Frank on the show, there's a lot of haters that email me, a lot of people that don't like the idea of having Frank on the show. But in any event, we're waiting for Jeff Curran to call in. Hopefully he'll call in sometime soon. If not, maybe we'll have to reschedule it coming up. Who knows? Tomorrow I got to go to the doctor. I'm trying this new weight loss program. Actually, it's not new to me. I've been on it several times before. It's called the OptiFast diet. And, you know, I've over the last two or three months, and I just really ballooned up to, I'm probably close to 300 right now. And I was really surprised because, you know, I've had blood pressure issues. My family has a history of high blood pressure. You know, I just have the worst genetics when it comes to health, you know. So, and I go to the local Walmart, and I was actually expecting my blood pressure to be a lot higher than what it was. So I was pleasantly surprised by having, you know, stage one hypertension as opposed to stage two. But in any event, tomorrow I'm going to be going on this diet. It's called the OptiFast diet. And it's administered, you know, for your doctor. You might be able to get the shakes and the bars online. But it's four shakes and two bars. It's like a total of 800 calories a day. Now, when I was on this last year, a couple of years, I mean, I could lose like 15, 20 pounds in a week if I stay on it. But the problem is I just, you know, a little while into the diet, you get hungry and then I relapse and then boom, you know, before I know it, I'm eating the same stuff I was before. But it's expensive. It's like $160 a week for this stuff. Like, oh my God, that's just, it's very expensive. But you know what, if I spend that and if I stay on the program, then I don't eat, you know, fast food and I save money that way. So in the long run, you'll save money, and you know, you'll be healthier. No question about it. Food is my drug of choice, ladies and gentlemen. Food is my response to capitalism. Okay, soothing the pain brought on by capitalism. We all do it in our own ways. Some, you know, are use drugs. Some use alcohol. It's food for me. Okay. All right. There's nothing really much going on in the world of MMA. You know, you've got some upcoming events. You've got a UFC fight night in Mexico, I think, next week.
This is all off the top of my head here because I'm just an almanac when it comes to this stuff. No question about it. I think in the main event, you're going to have Tony Ferguson versus Khabib. Tony Ferguson versus Rafael Dos Anjos. Now, this is a really interesting fight. We had Tony Ferguson on the program about a year and a half ago. And this is really before, he took out Barboza. And this is as he was rising to the top and just a lot of momentum that Tony Ferguson has behind him. And he's got such an exciting fighting style and whatnot. And, he's fighting Rafael Dos Anjos, who's coming off of the loss against Eddie Alvarez. That was a close fight. Eddie caught him and he finished him. And this is, one of these fights that, it's really very, very close. Although probably if I had to guess, RDA is the favorite going into this fight. And then you also have on this card, Ricardo Lamas is fighting Charles Oliveira. I guess it's somewhat of an interesting fight. Lamas was supposed to fight BJ Penn, and that card got canceled. And now he's fighting Oliveira, who supposedly is in the top 10 in the UFC. And either one of these guys, I guess, if they win some more fights, they could potentially be spoken about for a title shot. But really. Not a needle mover in terms of interest in that fight. I'm not saying it's not an important fight, but I don't think it's really going to draw a lot of people to FSN. But for the MMA fans out there, it's a pretty intriguing matchup. So you've got that. I'm trying to find out what other fights are on this card. I know Khabib is supposed to be having a fight. I'm not sure if he's fighting on this card or not. I know he's not fighting on UFC 205. I really want to find out. Is Donnie, if somebody can try to get me more information on this card here, please. This is really offensive. I don't have anything in front of me, and I need to find out who's on this card here besides the two fights that here we go. We got some information here now. Diego Sanchez is fighting. Wow, I can't believe Diego Sanchez is fighting. Do you remember when Diego Sanchez was on this program with Dan Quinn? What an awkward, weird interview that was. It was great. That was when Diego Sanchez was on Stevia. Oh, man, I don't even know if we have that. I don't even know if that's on the Blog Talk site. I want to see if I have that in my archives because a while back, I think it was somebody sent me a whole bunch of our shows that were, from back in the day, from 2006 and 2007. And we had Diego Sanchez on with Dan Quinn, and it was so funny, man. It was great. This is a pretty interesting fight because Marcin Held, of course, fought for Bellator. He's a really, really good leg lock fighter. It's going to be a challenge for Diego. That's a pretty interesting fight. I wasn't aware of that fight. Of course, I mentioned the Lamas-Oliveira fight. And then you've got Benil Dariush actually fighting Rashid Magomedov. And that's a very, very interesting fight there. Benil, many people felt that he lost against Michael Johnson, he's always been pretty decent fighter. Then from there, there's really just not a lot of interesting fighters or fights on this card. Those are the more notable fights on this card, which is taking place Saturday, November 5th. So this is going to be one day after the Bellator fight next week. Then I mentioned Bellator 163. And then after that, of course, you've got UFC 205. And, that's just really offensive, the ticket prices there. I mean, I like I said, I live about 40 minutes south of New York City, and maybe about 50 minutes or so
depending upon the traffic, but yeah, you can't even get in there. I mean, the ticket prices are just astronomical. It really is unfortunate that the worker out there, the poor man like myself, cannot get into this card. But, you know, look, whatever, it is what it is. I'll watch it. I'm actually scheduled to go over a friend's house for that interview, or if that show. I'll probably wind up going maybe for the main card. I don't know. It's got an interesting undercard, too. A lot of good fights on the undercard. And, you know, the main card is really, really very, very impressive. And it's going to be interesting to see just how many people buy this pay-per-view. Of course, the main fight, Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez. And they have at least two other title fights on this card. You've got, of course, Joanna and Jacek. And you've also got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson taking on Tyron Woodley. And so it's really from top to bottom. It's really, really a very, very interesting card that I'm sure is going to draw a lot of attention because of Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. And a lot of people are picking Eddie Alvarez to win this fight. You know, I mean, it's really, if you listen to the so-called MMA experts, it's Eddie Alvarez all the way. I mean, they're not even really giving Conor McGregor a shot. I mean, I will confess I probably get these fights right 50% of the time. And that seems to be the average amongst these so-called MMA analysts. I mean, really, you know, I mean, most of the time that I've seen, you know, these people are wrong. I mean, I picked CM Punk to beat Nicky Gall, and I was really, really disappointed about that. So, you know, anything could happen. I think certainly, you know, Conor could win. Conor could certainly knock out Eddie Alvarez. Is he going to be able to neutralize his wrestling? Is Eddie Alvarez just going to be too smart and not going to get caught up in you know, Conor McGregor's game? And is he just going to be, you know, utilizing the striking and wrestling? Actually, Eddie Alvarez has said that, you know, he wants to spend at least 15 minutes of this fight striking, and then the other half, you know, the other remaining time in the fight grappling and you know, mixing it up. So that shows you he's got some sort of game plan there. And obviously, Conor's the big knock on Conor is his, you know, lack of experience on the ground, or his susceptibility to takedowns and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here, because I think if Conor McGregor loses, if he loses two out of three fights, his stock is going to go down, and he's just not going to have the leverage, as much leverage with the company as he does now. Yeah, I mean, you've got the 145 division, which he's still the champion of, beating Jose Aldo. You've got other matches for him, sure, that absolutely, in lower weight classes. But I there's a lot more pressure on him on this fight, because again, if he loses, he's going to have less power, and he's going to be less of a draw, I think, going forward. And then, you know, you've got other fighters, 170 fighters that want to fight Conor, and everybody wants to fight Conor, obviously, to make as much money as they can. And, you know, this is something that's really bothering me about the UFC. I think, again, as I mentioned on the Bellator conference call, the changing MMA landscape out there, where it's almost weight divisions don't mean anything anymore. You know, I mean, it's this entertainment driven, you know, model that, you know, organizations like the UFC and Bellator are subscribing to now, in which, you know, it's basically a promotional race here to see who can get the most ratings. And, you know, again, the sport languishes, as I've said. I really think it's hard to, you know, deny that at this point, that, yeah, what difference does a weight class make anymore? I mean, you know, fighters are fighting, you know, whichever weight class they want to, whichever is convenient for them. You know, you've got Michael Bisping
talking about fighting George St. Pierre or wanting George St. Pierre to go up to middleweight and fight him there. And you know, George St. Pierre, of course, the welterweight champion, retired as the welterweight champion, or, you know, there's some discussion as to whether or not he actually retired or whether or not retired. Well, he did retire with the belt, but now, you know, he's basically either a free agent or he's trying to, you know, renegotiate with the UFC. And so, you know, him fighting at 185 and just all of these, you know, weird fights at different weight classes, sort of, I think, you know, and I could be wrong here, but I think sort of dilutes the sport and, you know, makes it almost almost meaningless. So, I mean, you do see this in boxing. You know, there are catch weights and there are, you know, fights that take place out of one's weight class. But I just think the matchmaking, particularly in the UFC, has been very, very arbitrary. And it continues to be. And this is just, you know, just almost further example of it. So, you know, I think we'll see more of this, especially since WME has taken over and they're an entertainment group and they have their own people that represent, you know, Hollywood stars. And it's Ari Emanuel, the brother of Rahm Emanuel, who's this disgusting, repulsive political figure in Chicago, Obama's former chief of staff, Chicago mayor. Just really, you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, that's I think the route that they're going to go right now. They're having this UFC summit in Las Vegas now, where they're trying to prepare. It's almost funny because they're trying to prepare the UFC fighters, UFC veterans for a career after MMA, which for most of these people, it's going to be another year or two, you know, because of the depreciation of fighters and the physical trauma that they go through and whatnot. And, you know, and all the brain injuries and Jordan Parsons of the world, which is really, really frightening. And so, you know, you've got fighters going over there and trying to figure out what they're going to do after the UFC, which is, for everybody's sake, I certainly hope that they would try to have some sort of plan, because it is just such a grim sport. It's just such a grim reality for the sport. And, you know, I don't know. And again, we could have this discussion, but I don't know if the sport is sustainable. I really don't know if MMA fighters and you know, choosing this as a career is sustainable for fighters and sustainable for the MMA organizations. I mean, you know, how long can these fighters do this? Typically, how long can the average MMA fighter do this if you have a certain degree of success? What's the financial implications? I mean, we talk about how low the fighter's pay is and how, you know, basically if you're a non-title holder in the UFC, you know, you are allowed a certain amount. You have a contract that you sign and you don't get pay-per-view points and you know, that's it. Your contract says you get this amount of money no matter who you fight, and that's it. And so it's you know, it's really, really unfortunate. I mean, again, you know, the fighters are just complete. It's almost just heartbreaking seeing how much these fighters are exploited. And so I don't know if the sports are going to be around another 10, 15 years. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? And if it is around another 10, 15 years, you're certainly not going to see any of the fighters that we see right now. I mean, you're going to have a whole different breed of fighters that come out, because you have many of the top. I mean, how many champions? I think about this. How many champions? How many top echelon
UFC fighters have contemplated retirement. And these people are, I mean, with the exception of the heavyweight division, you know, these people are relatively young. I mean, I can think of probably, you know, a half a dozen, if not a dozen, of fighters that have either went into retirement, have seriously contemplated retirement, and just have, you know, just an absolute disgust with the UFC. And it seems to be a problem with the UFC, you know, because Bellator fighters are you know, the sponsorship structure is different in Bellator. There appears to be a little bit more freedom that Bellator fighters have in terms of, you know, cross-promotional endeavors. You know, it's not as coercive as the UFC. I mean, Coker, you know, he's a guy that's generally liked by the fighters. And I guarantee you that Dana White, if you take away the gun pointed at the UFC fighters, I guarantee you a lot of UFC fighters do not like Dana White, or at least, you know, his strong arm negotiating style. Now, the question is that going to change with WME? I don't know. Nobody knows what they're going to do. But you know what? I would say I doubt it. I really do. Because WME is a business, and it's UFC is a business. It's a capitalist a business, and you know they're going to be cutting back. They've already contracted. They've already cut a lot of staff. You're seeing fighters, as I spoken about earlier in the show. You're seeing a lot of fighters wanting to leave the UFC because of dissatisfaction, and that's gonna grow. A growing number of fighters are going to wind up leaving the UFC, and they're really, really going to have to change things. They really are. I think a lot of the problem is Dana and the system itself. I really do. Now, I mean, if you're a fighter and you could try to negotiate with Dana, and you may not get anywhere with Dana, you may be able to negotiate with, you know, some other members, but it's really, really tough. It really is. And like I said, I do not believe that a majority of these fighters are happy with Dana White and the UFC, no matter what they say. I really do. They're not getting their piece of the pie, the piece of the pie that they deserve. And that's what's just so unfortunate. It really is. You see these fighters and that are just so banged up and you know, just, you know, they're going to have problems going forward. I mean, look at some of the fighters that are already tied. Look at a little guy like Chris Lieben. You know, I mean, what a mess guy is. An absolute mess. And I could think of, you know, dozens of fighters, again, that are in the same position. And we're going to start asking ourselves these questions, you know. What is it? Are these results acceptable? What can we do to present these results? You know, I'll give somebody like Cowboy Cerrone credit. I never could understand that guy, because Cowboy Cerrone, on the one hand, is this seemingly militia-loving, you know, right-wing, you know, blah, 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 blah. But yet, on the other hand, he wants to talk about starting a fighter's union. And you listen to him, and, you know, he's serious. He's definitely someone that's been exploited, frustrated with the UFC, and he has every right to be, because it's his labor. It's his body. It's his life that's being siphoned from him. I know a majority of fighters that feel like that. And, you know, so fighters have to start thinking differently. You know, they have to stop individualizing their success and realizing that they're all in the same position, whether you're on a UFC undercard or whether you're, you know, fighting in the main card. And it's almost sad, because I almost feel a kinship with these fighters, because this is what workers are going through in general in capitalism. You know, this constant insecurity, the surplus of labor that puts everybody in a position where they're
they're desperate and they're necessitous. And I was listening to one UFC fighter today, and he was talking about how he's at the mercy of the matchmakers. You know, because he lost two in a row, he's at the mercy of the matchmakers, which is really pathetic. I mean, it's really, really, really sad. And I don't accept that as being the reality. I don't accept that as being, oh, that's just the way it is and you got to adhere to the market. No, workers have to take over the market. And that can be done, and it should be done. But first, we just got to bypass people like Brian Stan, that clown on Sirius XM, who, by the way, Brian Stan's radio show, as I understand it, is being endorsed by the National Health Institute as a cure for insomnia. I mean, this is just real. It's really, really bad. I'd like to get Jeff Munson back on the show. Maybe Jeff Munson can go to wherever he's broadcasting and slap him around. You remember when Brian Stan years ago said that Jeff Munson should leave the country because of his political views? And then Jeff Munson came on the show and said, yeah, I would take him down and submit him one round. And Jeff Munson probably definitely could do that. We got to look at their role and what are they really, really trying to do and how they're really, really trying to oppress fighters out there. Because that's what's happening. And you notice a lot of these guys that end up retiring, like people like Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes and others, and they get jobs within the UFC, executive jobs, or, you know, jobs within the UFC, and who knows how secure these jobs are, but they all have that same mindset. You know, it's almost that same mindset that this very objective, you know, anti-fighter, individualistic mindset that is just so damaging. It really is. So, you know, it's a changing landscape, and, you know, maybe political events will catch up to the misery taking place in the sport of MMA. Now, a lot of people say, oh, Bob, there's so much opportunity out there. You know, I mean, look at all the organizations and, you know, look at someone like Antonio Silva who goes to Russia and is going to make $500,000 and whatnot. There isn't. I mean, you know, the situation still remains the same. You know, I mean, you're a MMA fighter. You're destroying your body. You're reducing your mental faculties. You're really at the mercy of your employers, your own, and you're not making what you shouldn't make anywhere near, you know, what you should be making. You're being exploited. And, you know, I mean, you know, you could try to go overseas and try to go maybe to, you know, Ryzen, or, you know, maybe try to go to Cage War. I don't know. Some of these are overseas promotions. But really, and you may be able to make some more money there. I mean, who knows? But you come back to the United States, you're going to be taxed for that money. Are you going to move your family over there? I mean, is it really realistic for a majority of MMA fighters here in the United States who are getting a good deal to go overseas and fight? I don't think so. I think even a very rare few people do that, because they can't, because their lives are rooted here in the United States, for the most part. And some of these people are families, and you know, what are they going to do? So I don't know. It's just a dire, dire picture for the fighters. And that's what we care about. You know, I really, really care about the welfare of the fighters. That's really the most important thing, you know, out there. And people like myself and Eddie and others, really a few others, but for the most part, we've been talking about this for years. You know, I mean, Eddie's been talking about this for 10 years, you know, literally. And people like Rob Macy and others that have joined the class action lawsuit are really, really brave. And they're trying to change things, but the fighters have to develop a consciousness themselves, and they have to you know, band together and abide by certain principles. And, you know, I don't know if the Muhammad Ali Act, if that's going to solve all problems. It certainly make it better for fighters. But I think it's going to have to be a whole new ballgame. It really is. All right. Obviously,
Jeff Cohen has not called in. Very, very disappointed. We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll try to get him on a show sometime in the future. Keep up to date with me. Friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can also follow me here on blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And if you're into radical political podcasts, you could join me every Monday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. with Carson's Corner and the election boycott advocates. My host, Christopher Allen Driscoll, Ralph Nader's media director for his three presidential campaigns. We really bring you very insightful and radical analysis that is designed to emancipate the workers out there. A very, very important show, one of the most important shows out there, the Election Boycott Advocate, folks. You ever think about boycotting the elections? It's a really, really good start. Really, really good thing that we've got going on, and we've had going on now for 4 or 5 years. So I encourage you to check us out every Monday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.